Greetings. I am Shisada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine.
Good evening, everyone. This is Shisada Akona Kamara. I'm joined by Pierre Yen, and you are listening to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started. I'll ask you all to close your eyes, take a nice deep breath, and call yourself forward as I clear the space for all of us. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zadkiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light for each one of us listening to this program. And I ask that each of these tubes of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds, to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. Pielian and I place ourselves in humble service to all of you. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions, and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. Because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. A nice deep breath and come on back. That was lovely. Yeah, good. Okay, Pielian, what are we talking about tonight?
The prodigal son.
The prodigal son. This is quite funny because I texted her today, and I forget things. If I don't have someone write it down or remind me, I will completely forget it. So I texted her and I said, we have to talk about the prodigal son. Don't let me forget, you know. And she texted me right back. And what did you say to me?
I said, it doesn't surprise me because that actually came to me last week when we were talking about vow of poverty.
That's right. Excellent. So do you want to start off then and tell us what came to you when we were talking about the vow of poverty and how you related it to the prodigal son story?
Sure. Well, where I came in last week is when we were talking about why is it okay to, you know, spend money on other things and not give to the church or your guru, things like that. And what came was because you'll love me anyway. And one of the things that came to me at the time was the story of the prodigal son and how really it's kind of abused, you know, and, you know, it's, churches tell it all the time, and it's kind of like, it doesn't matter how many times you screw up, you can still come here, you know? And, I think
so
that's
how,
how
does the, how does the church mean it when they, you know, give that story up?
Well, it's meant to be like, no matter how bad you screw up, you still, you can still come back, you know, like Jesus will always forgive you for whatever happens. Jesus will always love you, will always take you back. Things like that. That's how it's meant to be. But I feel like people take it the wrong way and they feel like they can just do whatever and still go to church on Sunday.
And that just by the act of going to church, all is forgiven, so no worries, right?
Yeah.
So it's an, it's easy to be Christian. Right? Piece of cake, go out party all week and go to church on Sunday and say your Hail Marys, you're good to go. Well, and there's probably truth to that, you know, and that's an actually a beautiful point. The prodigal son is interesting because in, remember, I always look at everything from multiple levels, right? So on one level, it's very accurate and very, very beautiful. And on another level, it just holds no water whatsoever. So that's what I wanted to talk about tonight, specifically concerning the story, because what it's bringing up right now is something that is important for us to constantly come back to, all right? It's very easy when you are sitting in the space such as this, when you're really contemplative and you're looking at, you know, well, what is God? What am I? You know, how do I fit in that? How do we all fit in that? And just when you get into those spaces, you move into levels of awareness that kind of transcend where you normally function from. But the downside is that until you have the actual experience of it, those awarenesses are fleeting, right? So you'll have it and it'll be like, wow, like I get it, you know? And then a month later, you've completely forgotten the experience, unless you're smart enough to write it down, which I always tell people, write all your stuff down, because the notes you take will serve you later. I promise you that. So the prodigal son. Okay, so for those of you who maybe aren't Christian or don't know the story, we'll keep it extremely basic. So let's take the story of a son who goes off and has been given, you know, money, a fortune, whatever, from, was he given it or what? Did he just take it? I forget.
They were given it.
They were given it. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this one son, goes off and squanders his money. Right. And then what happens is he's so ashamed that he feels that he can't return. And the basis of the story is that when he finally moves into the space where he's willing to humble himself enough to return home, knowing that, you know, he'll be ostracized or that, you know, he'll be disowned or whatever. When he finally does, his father greets him with open arms and is just happy to have his son home. He could care less about the money. It had nothing to do with the money. So on one level, from this reality that we're all appear to be moving in and having our being in, it's beautiful. And it shows the power of forgiveness, and how wonderful that can be. And certainly that's how the church would use that, right? Just as, you know, Christ died for the sins of the collective, sin not being the way you ever thought of it, sin just being strictly that the collective had collectively missed the mark and collectively moved into the space of identifying with separation versus their knowing that all is one. And that Christ's point for walking the planet was to do what he could do at the time to illustrate that you are not your physical form, that you are not that personality, that you transcend all of it, and that you are divine. You are God. And forgiveness plays a large role in that, because the way it's presented is that, you know, all is forgiven if you, and I think, you know, for like born again Christians, that's where they see it. When you are born again, when you come into that state where you accept the Christ as your savior, of course they would say Jesus, the person, I'm going to say the Christ. When you accept the Christ as your savior, not so much as your savior outside of yourself, but as something that you already are, but have forgotten and will move back into, not that you can leave it. It's very hard to put this in words. You can't actually leave it, but you go into these states of dream states. We'll put it that way. It's easier said that way. I'm sorry. I just completely lost where I was with that. With born again Christians. This is what happened. Sorry for that. Where was I with that? You've lost it too, haven't you? You're so funny. Okay. The point being, in this level, forgiveness does play a role. It's a beautiful thing to have an issue with another person and to be able to look at that person and truly forgive to the point where you don't see that action anymore, or you don't see the repercussions of bad choices or whatever it is that has happened. Now, outside of that, when we move into the understanding that exists at a higher level, it's quite interesting, because who's actually forgiving whom, and who's the one doing the forgiving in the first place? Okay, so I'll ask those two questions, and I'm going to look to PLAN to pretend that she's a beginner and see what she's got based to say to me based on what I just said to you. Does it make any sense to you whatsoever, or do you think you caught a little bit of that?
Are you using the prodigal son as the example?
You could, but beyond that, just the concept of forgiveness, period. Try to think back when you were new. If I said to you, you know, who's really forgiving whom when forgiveness happens?
Well, you would think I, the little self, personal self, is forgiving the other person.
Correct. Now, here's the tricky part, okay? If, we'll reason this out together, if there is, in this reality, okay, only one, and that one is the lower mind, and every personality that appears to be appearing in this reality is part and parcel of the one lower mind, all right? Meaning there's only one personality here, right? But it looks different. It takes on a different form and a different name, so it's very convincing that they're different personalities, but there truly isn't, because there's one program that's running, and it's cyclical, and it runs all the time. It's just that where it runs, where you've picked up a certain part, think of it as like a clock, right? So maybe PLAN's personality is at the 3 o'clock position, and maybe my personality was sitting at the 9 o'clock position. So when I look at her, it doesn't look the same, does it? Right? And that's why it's so easy to be tricked into believing it, because it keeps things looking different enough that you don't ever actually stop and think, oh, she's just on the other side of the same thing that I'm in the middle of, right? So from that place, okay, there's only one. If there's only one, who is forgiving whom? Could be a bit of a mind bender. And I hope it is, because that's a good thing. Right? If the personal self, when the personal self is running, can only witness itself in another and cannot witness the divine in another, right? Because it sees the other as separate. Then who needs the forgiveness in the first place? Who is there to forgive? If I have a relationship with PLAN and she does something that really irritates me, what I'm actually seeing, because both would be functioning from the personal self, from the ego, okay? I know y'all like the word ego, so I'll use it here. From the ego. If we're both functioning from ego and she's just irritated me, I'm not seeing her. I'm seeing myself. I'm seeing an aspect of myself that I have been either repressing or are in complete denial over. And I refuse to see it as me. And because I refuse to see it as me, what have I told you over and over again? I have to then what? Project it out into the outside world because it has to be seen someplace. Remember, this paradigm is all about balance. And because this paradigm is about opposites, those opposites have to be held in balance. So if you think of like the scales of justice, right? You know what that looks like. Those have to be balanced. And since they have to be balanced, if I can't see something as me, then I have to see it someplace. So if I am, if the unconscious mind is working overtime to repress something so that I don't see it, it has to come up. Now it comes up to be cleared. It's not coming up to punish you, right? She's not irritating me to punish me. She's acting in a manner that irritates me because it's a piece of the aspect of the personal self that needs to be witnessed, right? That's the only purpose for it. It's a gift. It's a huge gift. But you can't see it because of the irritation, right? Because of the judgment that sits there. And then we all feel justified in judging it because we're convinced that the way we, quote unquote, are is the better way. Okay? So outside of this third density reality, when you get into the non-polarized worlds or the illumined worlds, there's no one to forgive because it's all God and it is seen as all God. There's no one walking around not knowing that they're God, not knowing that everything in existence is God, okay? And what that really means for us here is that the same thing is going on here, and we just can't see it. And it's interesting because I just wrote something today, and I posted it on our Facebook page. And what I said was this: what if it was as simple as seeing all of it as God, without any judgment? So let's sit with that for a second. I mean, just imagine, okay, for just a second, that you could look at the entire world with everything that's happening and view all of it as just God, perfection. If you were capable of sitting in a space where you were incapable of judgment, right? You couldn't not see that. You understand what I'm saying? You couldn't not see it. It's the judgment that hides it, right? So if Pielian and I get in an altercation and she's screaming at me, right? She's pointing her finger at me and screaming at me, acting like she's going to hit me, right? She's getting all city on it. She does that. In that moment, if I can witness that this is a play of God and it's actually speaking to me, it's speaking to me to tell me something, to give me information, right? What on earth would I be angry about? Would there be anything to judge? If anything, it would be like, thank you. Thank you, Pielian, for screaming at me. Because you know what? In that moment, it's honest, isn't it? And that's beautiful. It's pure honesty. But what happens is I hold a story that says that, you know, yelling is bad or unacceptable or uncivilized or uncultured, whatever we want to call it. And as soon as that piece is in place and that belief is being held, then what? I have a need to experience this peaceful space all the time. And the last thing I want is the opposite of it. So anytime I'm around someone who raises their voice, I'm going to make sure that I get out of there quick because I don't want to be part of that energy, right? Bad energy. But it has to present itself. So it presents itself as her yelling at me, right? The gift is that God is saying, wake up, pay attention. You've forgotten this part of me. Here I am, right? But we lose the opportunity to see it because we immediately judge it. We immediately stand in condemnation of it. And so we lose the whole point. So we're going to go back to the quote. This is really important. This is why I'm going to repeat it. Good opportunity to write it down. Or you can go to the Facebook page and find it. What if it was as simple as seeing all of it as God without any judgment? Beggar on the street, God. High-powered Wall Street banker ripping off the whatever, millions of dollars, God. Local minister, God. Cat, God. Chemtrails, God. Ooh, could that be? Is that even possible? Chemtrails? GMOs? The Fed? The Illuminati? Really? Just think for a second, what if you couldn't not see it all as God? The whole thing kind of falls apart, doesn't it? How can you stand there and hold them separate from you when you know it's all the same thing, just in different variations of itself? Right? So from that space, you know, who's doing the forgiving? There's nothing to forgive. There's nothing to forgive. There's nothing that could happen that could be bad. There's nothing that could go wrong, right? Your divine awareness, you're witnessing the playing out of consciousness. I mean, it's really that simple. You're the awareness of it. You're not the one doing it. You're not the one who, even though you hear a voice, seems like you hear a voice in your head that says, oh, I'm hungry. You're not the one that actually gets up and walks to your refrigerator. You're not the one who opens the door. You're not the one who selects whatever it is that's going to be put into the body. That's a different level of consciousness altogether. You're the witness of that. The witness to the divine will of God. So consciousness is enslaved here in this system that is polarized. And so that means that what we have to witness is we have to witness God as everything in a polarized manner. So, you know, God is the car accident. God is the cancer. God is the fire in the house and the airplane going down and the earthquakes and the volcanoes erupting. Seems like people have an easier time believing that God could be nature, right? But not anything outside of that. How could God be an airplane going down, killing all those people? How could that be God? Well, you know, who's dying, first of all? If it's all God, who's actually doing the dying, right? When you get in deep enough, you actually have the experience where you witness that nothing can die. It's just not even possible. Awareness is awareness. It doesn't go anywhere, right? So it may look like there's something happening that we would call death. But again, that's only because it has to be experienced that way here, because God has to present as all of it in a polarized manner. Because it's polarized, we have to see God as baby, and we have to see God as dying person, right? We have to see God as corpse. We have to see God as embryo. God is seed, and then God is dead tree. Outside of this, there would never be a need for experiencing the life-death cycle. Because you are, what are you? Remember, I've told you this over and over. We'll do it again. What are you? Your divine nature is beginningless, endless, formless, single, being, knowledge, and bliss. The experience of existing outside of judgment is one of bliss. Place yourself there for a moment. If in a moment you could look out the window and see everything as the absolute perfection of the divine, how could you not be in bliss? What other state would be possible? Now, in this reality, forgiveness is lovely and necessary. But what one realizes is that you're never actually forgiving another person, okay? You're forgiving yourself. Because whatever it is that happened, that transpired between you and what you're thinking of as the other person, really didn't happen that way. You read that experience based on your own projections, based on your own memory, based on your judgment, based on your unmet needs, based on the beliefs that are locked up in consciousness. And it wasn't in that moment when, we go back to the story of the silent sage, yeah? Right? Remember, the silent sage comes home, and there's a robber in his house, and he comes at him with the big knife, and he's just about to thrust it into his chest, and just as he does, what does the silent sage say? He says, "Thou too art God," right? No resistance. What's there to resist? From that level of understanding, from that level of experience that the sage had, what is there to resist? If it is the will of God that a knife be plunged into this body in this moment, so be it. Because who is there to say it should be anything different? Who is the one who would say there could ever be anything different? That can only come from the personal self. The will of God is the will of God. That's what allows the archangels to maintain, or just angels in general, to maintain that angelic status. There's no sense of anything outside of the will of God. That's what they're there to do. To move the will of God, right? There's no like, oh, I don't think I want to do it today. It's not going on like that. And believe it or not, even for you, if you were capable in this moment of transcending the limitation of separation, that's how you'd function too. Because everything you would see in the world around you would be God talking to you. And it would be telling you all the time, go this way, do this, now do this, right? There wouldn't be any reason not to. And you could follow it, and then you could follow the magic, the pure magic of life. You know, God's plan is far greater than anything the personal self could ever, ever come up with. In its wildest dreams. And as soon as that personal self puts its stamp on anything, it's already limited what can be done. I had an experience with this. It was actually quite funny. I had an experience once with my guide who I was on the phone with her, and she said it actually had something completely unrelated to do with spirituality, quote unquote. It was a business thing. And she said, okay, she said, well, I need you to call so-and-so. We need to set up an appointment for, it was 2 days from that day. And my memory told me, huh, there's no chance that we're going to get with him in 2 days because he's an extremely busy person. He's got a lot going on. It just doesn't happen. I mean, you try to get a hold of this guy for weeks and you may not hear from him. Nothing, and it's nothing against him. He's just that busy, right? So, of course, knowing this, right, smart girl that I am, I'm like, yeah, right. Okay, I'll contact him. And what I couldn't see in the moment was that I had already killed it, right? And what she said to me was, I need you to get behind this. And the way she said it wasn't terribly pleasant either, which triggered me a little bit. I was like, oh, no, that was kind of rude. And when I got off the phone, I looked at it and I ended up writing this whole long thing, looking at the whole thing of like, what is a Pollyanna? And actually, I could see the beauty in the Pollyanna in that moment. Because in the moment, if I hadn't searched my database for my memories of what it's like, been like in the past to contact this person and to meet with this person, if I had gone into the experience with the expectation that, well, of course he's going to want to meet with us in 2 days. Why wouldn't he? Right? Of course it'll work out. And wow, what a fantastic opportunity this will be for all of us. And we can, you know, really start to move this thing. If I had moved into it from that place, the result could have been completely different. But it didn't even have an opportunity, right? Because I threw the blocker up so fast. And that's what she, in that moment, when she just said, I need you to get behind this, that's exactly what she was pointing to. You know, stop your personal story. It's not needed here. You know, it's not useful here at all. And get behind it. Right. And then I looked deeper and I went, wow, like, how often do we do that? Kellyanne is shaking her head. Uh-huh. I mean, how often do we do that? We rely on our memory to set up what's going to happen for just about everything in our lives. Why is it so beautiful when you first meet somebody and start dating someone that you fall in love with? Why is it so beautiful? Is it because it's new? Yeah, kind of. But it's beautiful because there's no memory there. There's no past there. Right? The patterns haven't started to interplay with each other yet. So you have an opportunity in the very beginning of actually witnessing the essence of the other person. Their true divine self. That's what you fall in love with. You don't fall in love with someone's personality. And this is where it gets really interesting. This is why the divorce rate is so high, right? And why before the divorce rate was so high, we had so many, you know, elderly couples who absolutely hated each other but stayed together forever anyway, because you had to. You fall in love because in the beginning, your heart sees their heart. So God truly is just loving itself, right? And in that time, you're able to see the individuation of the other, but you're still seeing it. It's still God. I mean, of course, you're not aware of that. But that's what you're seeing. And so anything that may be something that would irritate you from a personal place doesn't in the beginning, does it? But sure enough, after a little bit of time goes by, little tiny things start to creep in and you start to go, oh, you know, it kind of annoys me when he scrapes his teeth on his fork. I'm trying to think of something. Whatever. It really annoys me when, you know, she leaves her wet bras hanging over the shower curtain rod to dry. I don't know. It really annoys me when he leaves the toilet seat up. She leaves the toothpaste cap off. Okay? And this is the beginning of the personalities now coming forward and taking over that spot that the hearts were living from before. That constriction starts to set in. So in the beginning, people fall in love and then they get married. And then, you know, within a fairly short amount of time, relatively speaking, they end up just not even wanting to be together anymore. And they're like, well, I don't understand what happened, you know. Something there died. Did something die? No. Nothing died. Because the essence is still there. You know? If you were able in that moment to strip away all of the judgment, all of it, if you were capable in the moment of seeing all of those little idiosyncrasies that drive you crazy as God, right? Talking to you directly, bringing it to your attention. And you were able to see that and accept it, right? Take it on as your own. Then what would remain? Well, the only thing that could remain, that's the heart, right? That is the divine. And it's always right there. And that's the saddest part about when relationships fail, you know, is that really, if the people were just capable of being in that space just for a moment together, they would actually see, oh, we really do love each other. You know, because the bottom line is that outside of the personal self, you could love anybody equally. It's all the same. I mean, love is love. So there's no reason. There's just no reason that you couldn't be with anybody and be perfectly content from a place of the heart. You can be, you know, as an illumined person here on the planet, you could be with anybody. And that person could be someone who has no idea whatsoever about spiritual work. And they're very happy just being an average fallen human, you know, and you can be perfectly happy with them because it wouldn't matter what they do. You wouldn't ever take it personally, right? And of course, they would lash out at you. It would have to happen because if you're in a place where you're very clear, what that actually does to the person that you're with is it drives them crazy because it triggers all of their stuff. It's very difficult for people who don't have deeper understandings to spend time with those who are illumined, you put it that way. Because it just, because they're the, you know, they work as the perfect mirror for that individual. And anything that the individual would normally use in their patterning to catch you, to suck you in, which would enable them to get their fix, their chemical fix, you know, you're not playing that game, right? And it'll drive them up a wall. But the beautiful thing is that if you can hold that space, and it's not easy to do, it's part of your, you know, moving into different levels of mastery. When you can hold that space and not get engaged, not walk into that person's reality, this is what happens. As soon as you engage with it, their consciousness, their reality literally wraps itself around your consciousness. All right. And then you have to throw it off. All right. You have to be able to walk out and actually throw it off of you. But if you're capable of doing that, then they're left with two options, right? The first is to just go completely crazy on you. Maybe just walk out completely, just not want anything to do with you because they just won't be able to handle it. And the second thing is that because in that moment when you will not engage, the only thing they're left with is to see their own stuff. And I have seen that very clearly on many occasions with people where in that opportunity, that they have, and it's like, well, what's the ego going to do here? I mean, it has to make a decision. It's either going to hightail it out of here or it's going to take a look And I've seen it over and over and over again. You'll have someone who's really seriously upset and they're berating someone and they're, you know, just in attack mode. And they'll turn it around and all of a sudden it's like they get it and they'll apologize. You know, you didn't have to do anything. You just stopped. You just didn't engage. You know, sometimes it's like, you know what? You're free to think whatever you want to think. That's cool. And then you're done. But I want to fight. But I want to fight. And you're not just not going to do it. Use that sometime with your spouse. And see how that goes. Now, the hard thing is you have to be able to maintain it. And that can be difficult because the ego, you know, it's not your spouse. Okay. Remember, there's only one lower mind. So it's playing with itself and it will try to do everything in its power to get you to kind of cave and get involved. And she's shaking her head again. She has seen that. You've seen that. Yeah. You want to speak to that? No. Say something. I feel like you're tired of my voice.
No, I have. I mean, when you get so used to running your pattern with people, you know, and then when you actually see like, oh, like we're engaging here, like it's starting again, and you stop it, it's like the other person, they don't know what to do with it.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's either they'll try to chase you down to get you to, you know, to engage, or they'll scream and yell, or sometimes if you're really lucky, they'll like walk away or something.
They go in the other room and kick the dog. I've witnessed not that, but I've witnessed someone doing that and then doing exactly that, going in another room, and then you hear them start engaging with someone else. It's like they just have to, you know, someone has to engage with my ego, right? Give me a reason to judge you and feel good about it, you know, so I can kind of swing out of the space I'm in. Because that's, you know, the end of the day, that's what's going on. They're in pain, you know, and you have to have compassion for that. It's not their fault, right? It's very innocent. The whole thing is just so, so innocent. It can be really difficult to experience the innocence when it feels personal. But if in a moment when it does feel personal and you feel a level of pain kicking in, whether you're experiencing it as actual hurtful kind of pain, or you just are experiencing that you have emotion attached to it, because that's all it is. You just have to look for emotion, and it can be really subtle, but look for emotion. So as soon as you see that there is emotion going on with you, meaning you aren't detached from the story of it, then you know, oh, you know, I'm already engaged. There it is, as soon as you see it. And in that moment, you can stop yourself, you know, kind of internally. And for those of you who are very new to this, it will be incredibly difficult to do that. I would just recommend you leave the room completely and go lock yourself in another room and just sit. And try to just let that energy run before you do anything else. Because it'll eventually dissipate and then the charge will be gone. But you don't want to take action when that charge is there, because that's, you know, that's all that good karma building stuff. So why go there if you don't need to? And you'll trip up and make mistakes. Everybody does. And that's part of learning. That's got to. Right? So don't judge yourself for that. I've heard before from a very, very good source, you know, made a comment one day about how judgment is like, you just never, ever want to judge yourself, because it actually will make the soul pull away from you, because it just can't tolerate that space of judgment of the self, especially, you know. So it just kind of hightails it. So just know that whatever's happening, even if you trip up and you end up screaming at somebody, don't judge yourself for it and beat yourself up over it. See what there is to be learned in it, right? Now you can certainly apologize to the person that you've berated and then, you know, quote unquote, forgive yourself for slipping up when you knew better, right? hopefully when you know better, you do better, but that doesn't always happen, does it? And then in that moment, you just let it go. You know, there it was. It's there to be seen. So what was it that really caught me? What was it? You know, go in, explore it, inquire. What happened? Why was it that that one comment sent me into a tizzy? Yeah. And find that. Find what sits underneath it, right? Scope it out. You'll usually see that it has nothing to do with the person who said it at all. There's a meaning in it. It triggered one of your beliefs. That's all that happened, right? And so that belief that it triggered was something that was taken on when you were small, most likely, very small. Probably something you were, you know, in the culture you were raised in or in your household or whatever. You just learned it. And it got triggered and it ticked you off because you don't want to think that the other side that that person's presenting could be equally true. Right, that's very scary. You know, what happens to my world if I find out that all these things that I've been holding on to so hard just have no weight anymore? I had a student who, gosh, I wish I could quote him because he said something to me that he was struggling with. And it was basically like he came into a space where he's like, you know, I feel like I don't want to let it go. This is what he saw. It was actually quite profound. I don't want to let it go because I've worked really hard for a really long time to hold all of this together. And if I let it go, then I've done it all for nothing. Right? Isn't that interesting? Really profound level of awareness, though, to go in and see that about oneself. I'm hesitant to go in and do the work deeper because I've taken a lifetime to build my concept of who I am. And you're telling me if I go in and do this, that's going to fall apart, you know? And then what? And then I've wasted 30 some odd years. And I'm like, no, goodness, wasted. No, not at all. You know, you're going to find yourself again. You're not losing anything. There's only everything to be gained. There's nothing to be lost. There's, you know, in this world, this is a very profound thing. In this world of the one mind experiencing itself, there's no one actually here. I mean, look at that. There's no one actually here. Could that be? But I'm looking at someone right now. She's very pretty, too. She's a beautiful woman. We'll have to put a picture of you on the site sometime so people know what you look like. She's laughing. Humble girl. All these identifiers. She's beautiful and she's humble. Okay. All right. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else about forgiveness that needs to be brought up. If you are familiar with the work of like A Course in Miracles or who is it? Gary Renard's work, Disappearance of the Universe, I think it's called. You'll be aware of this concept of, you know, just that forgiveness is occurring within, that you just have to forgive yourself. That's what they're referring to. Okay. From the level of the personal self, you are only forgiving yourself because the thing that just irritated you is you. It can't be anything else, just you. Okay. But beyond that, okay, and you do need to move through these stages. You can't just hyper jump from one level to another. It doesn't work like that. I mean, every now and again, but it's pretty rare. So for most people, you do need to move through those stages. Feeling like you're forgiving another person is key for people when they haven't ever done spiritual work because they hold everything against the world, right? Then they move into another level of awareness and then they can see that, oh, it's really about me just forgiving myself because I've been the one holding all this stuff against myself, really, right? Then beyond that is the seeing that none of that ever really happened because it was all occurring within the program of duality, you know, the matrix that we call polarization. And that the true you, the divine you, is resting perfectly and beautifully within the all that is. And it's never gone anywhere. And you will have a moment of awakening where you will actually see that. Christ has been here the whole time. It's just moving in and out of the dream state. And you'll have the experience where you can look at your life and you will actually witness where Christ, as you, has been there and very present. And you just didn't recognize it. It's beautiful. All right, so before we go into our closing meditation, which will be perfectly in keeping with what I just wrapped up with, let me just mention very quickly for those of you listening who are new, the websites that we kind of have running. You can find us at the ShambhalaCenter.org, our main website. You can get you can buy the archives of our program there. We do that on a donation basis. It's important to us that you're able to get the work and keep listening. So we do ask for a donation, but it's up to you how much you choose to give. And we can also take just donations as well for the organization, for our church. And we also have a fabulous Facebook page at facebook.com/TheShambhalaCenter. And we have, we're working closely with the Add Your Energy group, doing weekly short Hold the Space meditations and monthly long Embrace the Space meditations. They're global. We just had one Tuesday night and we facilitated here in Charlotte and it was fantastic. It was incredible. So for those of you who do enjoy meditation and you want to be of service globally, please go to facebook.com, AYE Gatherings, and like and follow that page. Get updates there. It's a great group of people. Their kind of slogan is that they're owned by no one but here for everyone, which I think is fantastic. So we're proud to be part of that group. I guess that's about it. Yeah. Okay. So now we're going to go into our song. I'm going to ask you just to sit. We're not going to transmute tonight. I just want you to sit with the words to this song. They're profound and beautiful. So just allow yourself to drift with it. We love you so much. Thank you for joining us as always. And we will see you next Thursday night. Good night.
You are divine.